Hey, gang. Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Republic Broadcasting is the only republic you have left, so please support it. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, and send a donation. Also, go to nationalbugle.com. That's where you can download the Co-Certified app. You'll see the link to the app right there in the upper right-hand corner. You'll also see a bunch of articles that I put up and also that Mark Dankoff has put up. Mark Dankoff is with us right now as we speak. Mark, happy Friday.
Well, it's good to be with you. I wanted to apologize to our listeners at National Bugle Radio. I had planned on having some additional stories up by now, but that will happen undoubtedly this weekend. I got a couple of new ones up there before this show. But in terms of this weekend, both to cover our listeners as well as my show with ACH on Monday coming out of London, the so-called Dankoff Report, we'll have plenty of new stories up there. And we have a few that we can reference today.
Okay. So, and you've been busy. You also had an interview that was just aired with the Tehran Times. Well, Press TV, who was it with?
Well, the interview was a major interview with the Tehran Times, Iran's so-called leading international daily.
And it's a good paper, actually.
It's an excellent paper, and they did a very lengthy interview with me that has also been picked up by South Front. Now, I mentioned South Front because if you go to what used to be Mark Dankoff's America, I now call it Mark Dankoff's Catacomb because I hardly recognize America anymore. But nonetheless, if you go to my site on WordPress, you'll see South Front listed there as one of our recommended news sites. They do a terrific job of telling you what the Zionists and neocons and globalists don't want you to know in regard to Russia or Ukraine or Iran or Syria or Iraq or Afghanistan or Libya or Eastern Europe or anywhere else. But South Front also picked up that Tehran Times interview with me, and I have both the Tehran Times link and the South Front link put up on our news board already, so our listeners will be able to see that one at nationalbugle.com.
All right, great. So, hey, what are the people in Tehran worried about right now? Is there a... Because you hear some pretty bellicose sounds coming out of Tel Aviv.
Yes. And you know what's interesting about that, of course, is that there in Tel Aviv, there's a lot of political instability in Israel right now, obviously, with these pro and anti-Netanyahu factions. There was the tragedy yesterday in regard to this collapse at some time. I believe it was a bonfire at this religious event in Israel that, according to CNN's front page today, killed 45 people. We certainly take no pleasure in announcing that tragedy. But it would seem that Israel is caught between a rock and a hard place because on the one hand, the Biden administration is following the Israeli line and attaching so many conditions to the American reentry of JCPOA that it's quite clear that the Biden administration's promise to reenter that nuclear agreement with Iran is a complete fraud, that Anthony Blinken and Wendy Sherman and certainly Victoria Nuland have done their job as the three basic Zio advisors to Joe Biden in foreign policy in ensuring that JCPOA, P5 plus one with Iran, is in all likelihood completely dead, which mm-hmm. is what Biden's Zio backers certainly want to happen. But in terms of actually attacking Iran, I think that this is where we see some real problems occurring for the Zio industry. Because basically it's dawned on more people, especially with what Biden and Nuland and company, Blinken and company, have been doing in the Ukraine and in the Donbass, that Putin and Lavrov have largely been very diplomatic, but nonetheless very clear about what would happen if the illegitimate regime in Kiev chooses to launch some sort of a military operation in the Donbass itself. That's where we recommend the Donbass Insider, by the way. I just discovered this fine source last night. We put up Foreign Minister Lavrov's statement on the Donbass on the big board, even as we speak, at nationalbugle.com. You can learn more about the Donbass Insider, which is, once again, like South Front, giving our listeners and our readers an opportunity to learn things that obviously the Zyokon establishment in the United States and the government and the news media does not want our people reading or listening to. But having said that, it's a situation where it's become increasingly clear to people that when it comes to Eastern Europe, when it comes to these latest NATO military operations in the Baltics, when it comes to these threats on the part of Kiev to launch a military operation against the Donbass, when it comes to Zelensky opening up his big mouth and claiming that he has a guarantee from the United States and NATO to defend him in his aggression against the Donbass and potentially a conflict with Russia, Biden is clearly backing off of that now. And that in turn connects to the Iranian situation, because with the increasing strength of Iran's ties, both with Putin's Russia and with China, and with China's displeasure over American policy in the South China Sea and as it relates to Taiwan, a misstep with Iran could well bring in a situation where the Biden administration would suddenly find it was not simply dealing with Iran on behalf of its Zio domestic allies and on behalf of the Netanyahu regime, but all of a sudden Iran, because of the linkage of Iran to both Russia and China, you could see the Ukraine, the Donbass coming into play in all of this. Mm-hmm. The whole business of the South China Sea and Taiwan could become a part of this very, very quickly. The attempts on the part of both Russia and Iran and China to de-dollarize their respective economies would simply accelerate, and we could find ourselves in an uncontrollable situation if the United States is suckered into a Janissary war attack on Iran or would support Israel in an act of aggression against Iran, because all of a sudden, beginning, I think, with the countering of the Zyokon initiatives in Syria on the part of Vladimir Putin in 2015, we must remember that that happened subsequent to the illegitimate coup in the Ukraine supported mm-hmm. by Newland and Clinton and company mm-hmm. in February mm-hmm. of 2014. The Zyokons clearly were caught flat-footed when Putin intervened in Syria. They'd better not forget that when it comes to the very strong possibility that with these American NATO moves in Eastern Europe and in the Baltics and in the Black Sea, and with these American threats being made against Tehran, and with this whole business of China entering the picture, this could suddenly blow up into something that none of these neocons had planned on. And I would suspect that at least a few of them have at least enough common sense that they're beginning to exercise a little bit more caution in regard to just how dangerous and how deep the quicksand could get in a real hurry.
Okay, I got a couple questions. So,
sure.
Right now, you look at the administration of fake President Biden, and to a large extent, especially in the foreign policy team, it's like the band's back together. Now, with regard to Iran, the lead negotiator of the Iran nuclear deal, the JCPOA, if that's the correct
yes.
abbreviation, the lead negotiator was Wendy Sherman, who at the time was the number three person at the State Department. Now she's number two. She was the lead negotiator. Now there was the Secretary of Energy, Ernest Moniz, I don't know, it's a Portuguese name. He was involved, and he's not around anymore. He was this kind of strange-looking guy, short guy with long gray hair that covered his ears. Kind of weird-looking, but he was a nuclear physicist, so they brought him along because he actually knew the nuts and bolts of what they were talking about. But the lead negotiator was Wendy Sherman, and of course, Tony Blinken was involved to an extent as well. And it wasn't easy to get the nuclear deal through, approved by... did it ever get Senate approval? I mean, it was a treaty, right? Was it a treaty and it got Senate approval? Yeah.
Well, that's, you know, it's interesting. I have to confess something. I don't recall an official vote of the United States Senate on that pact.
I think it got a vote. Don't you remember? I mean, I don't remember the vote per se, but I do remember Bibi Netanyahu being invited over to lobby against it.
Yes.
He was invited over to lobby against it. So I don't know. I mean, that's not the main point, but I thought it did get congressional approval. I mean, if it's a treaty, it's supposed to get 3/5 majority in the Senate, right? 60 votes in the Senate to ratify a treaty. But at any rate, regardless of that, that's anybody can look at that on Wikipedia. The Obama administration spent a lot of political capital getting that thing through, getting America on board with that. And now you've got Blinken back in, and you've got, I mean, I don't think Biden as vice president had much to do with it, but you have Blinken back in, you have Wendy Sherman with a promotion. And why are they, you would think that if they wanted to get the United States into that deal at the time, which wasn't necessarily the best deal for Iran. I mean, Iran was kind of damned if they did and damned if they didn't, right?
And I think if you read David Stockman has published on JCPOA P5+1, the amazing thing is that it was basically a capitulationist agreement on the part of the Iranians. Mm-hmm. When you look at what they agreed to in the incredibly strict inspection regimen that was involved, this agreement, I think, was airtight in terms of controlling the Iranian business of enriching uranium in terms of percentages and centrifuges. It certainly was an incredible inspection regimen that they were signing off on in regard to all kinds of International Atomic Energy Agency and American inspections of what was going on there. Stockman and Buchanan clearly thought that the agreement was entirely defensible. What you now have is a circumstance where, because of the manner in which the United States pulled out of the deal, you have Biden, and I told the Iranians this from time to time, both with Tehran Times and Fars News Agency and Tasnim News Agency, as well as Press TV. I said, you just wait. All of this talk about Biden committing to a reentry of the United States into JCPOA, I said, I'm guaranteeing you that you will see after he's elected, if he is elected, quote unquote elected, right, that this whole thing will not be re-engaged in by the United States. And certainly I've been proven correct about that. And I think Scott Ritter had the correct take on it as well, from a more knowledgeable perspective than I, that what I said about Biden would entirely be the case. And certainly it's proven to be the case where Biden and Blinken and Sherman and Nuland have together attached so many conditions to an American reentry into JCPOA that the Iranians quite rightly have simply told them no deal. You reenter with no preconditions or extra conditions attached or the whole thing is off. And I think that's entirely a legitimate position on the part of the Iranians, because we must understand that they abided by their end of the deal. The United States did not. And for having abided by their end of the deal, they had a series of warlike, draconian economic sanctions imposed upon them. So the notion that they should renegotiate the deal, in a sense, by allowing the Biden administration to attach all kinds of additional conditions to what was agreed upon during the Obama administration, I think the Iranians quite rightly have said no thanks, and they've made it very clear that it's reentry into the deal or nothing. So it's going to be a fascinating thing to watch, because, again, with the moves that the United States has re-engaged in making in this Ukraine situation and with the Donbass just since Biden has been in power, you see the absolutely incredible military exercises being undertaken by NATO in the Baltic region, the most extensive since the end of the Cold War. All of a sudden, it's dawned on the Iranians, and I had said this in my Tehran Times interview which South Front also ran, which is on our big board at nationalbugle.com. I said, hey, this is a circumstance where one of the things that Iran absolutely needs to do, and Iran is doing it, and that is to maintain the kind of close political, diplomatic, military, and economic relationship possible with both the Russians and the Chinese, so that those people who want regime change in Tehran at any price and who would be willing to launch an American Anglo-Zio war against Iran must start counting the cost very carefully when the possible engagement of Russia and China in the situation is considered. Mm-hmm. So this is where all of a sudden I think the Ukraine and the Donbass play a real role in complicating the Zio plan on Iran, because I think the Russians, with what they have said about what the Zelensky administration is attempting to do in the Donbass, they simply won't go for it. And they're not going to sit by and to watch all these Russian-speaking, Russian-ethnic people in the eastern part of Ukraine being subsumed by an American EU coup from February of 2014 that the people of the Donbass want no part of, the people of Crimea want no part of. Mm-hmm. So we'll have to watch this whole thing, but it could get very sticky very quickly.
Okay, I want to get to the Ukraine, but I want to finish up with Iran. I did check, and first of all, I was incorrect about the treaty needing 3/5 majority; it needs a 2/3 majority.
Two thirds.
So right. I apologize. I should know better than that. And this JCPOA was not a treaty. It's not even an executive agreement, but. There is legislation in America that went along with it, the JCPOA Review Act, and
yes.
That which was just regular legislation, so it needed a simple majority in both the House and Senate, and that's what the legislative battle was over. That's what Bibi Netanyahu was over here trying to avoid. Okay, so my last question about Iran is, I mean, the Iranian government isn't always best at optics, right? And, you know, you get the rallies, and I guess there's the death to America chance and whatever. But the optics aside, the Iranian government, if you look at their behavior since the Islamic State was proclaimed in, well, I guess 1979, they really haven't been all that radical in terms of diplomacy internationally, with, you know, maybe the Iran-Iraq war, but of course that was really Saddam Hussein, Iraq with American backing that invaded.
That's
Iraq.
Right. The Iranians were basically engaging in what the Zio-cons say they have no right to, and that was self-defense. The Iranians were defending themselves in that war from 1980 to 1988. And I would recommend to people to get a good summation of that war and a chronology of that war. Take a look at Dilip Hero, H-I-R-O, Dilip Hero's book, The Iranian Labyrinth. It's a very fine book anyway, but there's a good summation of the Iran-Iraq war in it.
So my question for when we get back from the break is regarding Iran's development of nuclear weapons. You know, on the one hand, maybe that makes Iran more of a target of Zionist forces. But on the other hand, honestly, if Iran had nuclear weapons, wouldn't that be maybe the next best thing to a nuclear
make the world
That's my question for the other side of the break.
And get off my shoulders. Say the things you used to say, and make the world go.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Hello, I'm Dr. Leonard Horowitz. I was right 30 years ago in warning the world about threatening lab virus outbreaks, AIDS, and Ebola. I was right 20 years ago when FBI Director Robert Mueller made me a suspect in the anthrax mailings because I warned the Bureau before the CIA's biocrime and Cipro sales psyops happened. I was right about COVID-19 being an AIDS-laced mutagen planned to resurge this fall to excuse officials' profitable depopulation globalization agendas. And I was right about the only safeguards being antioxidants and holy spiritual sustenance. Vitamin C, D, zinc, chlorophyll, oxygen, and oxysilver especially transmits the frequency resonance to neutralize the expanded function bioweapon. Oxysilver is a double superconductor of the healing power of love. It is the first nutraceutical invented to amplify prayer power and the faithful, loving intention of your heart. Buy, try, and stockpile OxySilver through HealthyWorldStore.com.
And make the world go away.
So that's my question. Is how much, honestly, what do we have to fear from an Iranian development of a nuclear weapon?
Well, I'll be frank with you. I don't think we have anything to fear. And I know that that is heresy, both to the CNNs and the Fox Newses of the world. But frankly, and this was the basic thing that was conveyed in my interview with the Tehran Times, that South Front also picked up on, that's on our big board, and that is the notion of nuclear monopoly. Israel wants a nuclear monopoly in the Middle East, and they presently have it. Now, if you had a situation where the Iranians were able to possess a nuclear weapon, then all of a sudden I think it would become very obvious that these bellicose policies on the part of the United States and Israel directed at Iran would have to be rethought. And that, to me, is like being in a neighborhood, a tough neighborhood, and where you're in a tough neighborhood and where for no good reason you have some bad guys in the neighborhood that want to burn your house down. But if all of a sudden they find out that you not only have a new alarm system, but you've got a level of weaponry capable of defending your own home, then obviously people are going to think twice about that. Now, we all understand that as American nationalists who believe in the Second Amendment of our Constitution, where we have as much to fear probably from our own government as the Iranians do. And as I look at this whole thing, in contrast to all of the orthodoxy on this being offered by Zio Media in the United States and from the Zio spokesman in the American National Security Establishment, it would actually be a safer neighborhood in the Middle East, because all of a sudden Israel would have to think twice about threatening all of these various people in the Middle East, which is not simply a question of the Iranians, but it's also a question of the Lebanese. It's a question of Syria. It's a question of Libya. It's a question of Iraq. It's a question of Afghanistan. And so obviously you have a situation here where Iran's ability to defend themselves could very quickly become a situation where Iran's ability to defend itself could be extended to their allies in the Shia Crescent, for example. All of a sudden, Israel would find that it could no longer have a monopoly on the use of nuclear weaponry. All of a sudden, Israel would find the international community with stronger insistence that the nuclear non-proliferation treaty had better involve Israel as well as Iran, right? So Israel is in a very defenseless position in terms of any degree of moral credibility at all in their position. And as that becomes increasingly obvious to more and more people, the American people need to understand that it's not simply a question of immoral policy on the part of Israel, but it's a situation where American lives are going to be drawn into something much larger than ourselves if we insist on doing something with Iran that at some juncture will involve the Russians and the Chinese, who I do not believe are going to just sit back and take any more Zio aggression lying down.
Okay, and so that's a question I have, is the Russians and the Chinese, I don't know, I mean, they don't have an official military alliance, anything like NATO, but they are moving closer together, and you've had joint Russian, Chinese, Iranian naval exercises off of Iran.
Yes.
So we've got things like that going on. Is there, and you think there would be a prospect of China and Iran China and Russia backing Iran if need be?
Yes, and I don't think that necessarily has to be military, although it could be, particularly in the case of Putin's Russia, because I think President Putin understands that Zio aggression aimed at Syria and subsequently at Iran is part and parcel of the Zio aggression that is being aimed at his southern underbelly with what has been going on in the Ukraine and in the Donbass, with what happened in 2008 involving Georgia and South Ossetia and so forth and so on. But in this particular case, it's not simply a question, in my view, of what the Russians could choose to do militarily to defend their ally. It's a question of what Russia and China, especially China, could do to the United States economically. And that would involve this whole business of undertaking actions to de-dollarize economies and to dump American debt instruments on the open market. That could create a very frosty situation very quickly.
Okay, I want to get to Donbass, but you raise this interesting question about the dollar. And so you've got the dollar, you've got the SWIFT system, which is this international banking system for transferring money from one country to another.
Yes. And
while the dollar and the SWIFT system were very dominant in the 1970s, 1980s, here 50 years later, is there any reason why, say, Russia, China, and other countries couldn't just form a new international currency exchange system? And is there really the need for the dollar? We're coming up on the break, but that's what you can think about that during the break.
Time.
Sure. And we'll be right back. You're feeling lonely. Anytime.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company? And it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks.
When pigs fly!
The new Ease-Off Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The Ease-Off lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive. Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the Ease-Off? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my Ease-Off?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. Ease-Off LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. We have a special promotion going on at Republic Broadcasting. This is a fundraiser for Republic Broadcasting involving the Energy Planner. Mail me a postcard. My address is at my website at thelibertyman.com. We pick a postcard every other Thursday. When your postcard is drawn out, you get to buy an Energy Planner for $215 instead of $285, $70 discount. $200 goes to Republic Broadcasting. You also get a 10% discount on my mattress pads. So get those postcards in, put your name, your telephone number, your email address on there, and when your postcard is drawn, you get to get an Energy Cleaner for $215 instead of $285. Mattress pads, 10% off. Help us out at Republic Broadcasting and help yourself to get an Energy Cleaner at a deep discount. It's a win-win situation for everybody. We hope you can get these postcards in soon. Thank you very much.
Extendivite 7-herb formulation is approved to help maintain cardiovascular health and help lower blood lipid levels in adults. Extendivite is made from hawthorn, garlic, valerian, cayenne, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, and milk thistle. The herbs in Extendivite have been chosen for their ability to help with overall health. Many people have reported improved energy and stamina in just a few months. If you think you could feel just a little bit better, then Extendivite may just be for you. Extendivite is an all-natural supplement. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
If you say you want me back again, that's the time I'll come back home to you.
And we are back. I like the birds I'm hearing in the background. And
well, I've got a rescue German Shepherd that I'm walking not far from where I live. And it's been kind of a wild day for radio shows because just before you and I started, I have a neighbor that lives on my street who is in a very, very serious health situation who fell. And his wife called me, and I went over there and got him up and got him situated before we went on the air. So it's been kind of a wild day, and I was then behind in terms of walking this monster that I have now, in addition to my two little ones. So I'm out here enjoying nature, even as we talk about all of these horrible things.
Well, you know, I did Stormfront Radio for 4 years, and at least the last year and a half or 2 years, as long as I wasn't the one hosting the show, I was usually out walking my dog, and listeners have no idea how much dog feces I picked up while doing that.
And that's before Biden became president.
I know.
Yes.
Okay. Well, anyway, speaking of feces and Biden, is there any reason why the international financial system really needs the dollar and SWIFT? Aren't the Russians and the Chinese and whoever else capable of starting up one on their own?
Well, the Russians are for sure starting up one on their own. And if people will go to Google because I'm not in front of my computer and I'm not looking at our big board. I can't come up with the exact acronym. But if you simply search for the Russian alternative to SWIFT, put that into your Google or whatever search engine you use, and the actual name of this Russian alternative will crop up. And it is very apparent that the Russians and the Chinese and the Iranians and the Venezuelans and virtually anybody that is not considered to be friendly to the American Anglo-Zio Empire has figured out that this business of de-dollarization of their transactions is the key to putting a monkey wrench into the Zio Anglo-American Empire. And, of course, as you point out, Dr. Slattery, this business of SWIFT and this international system that the United States has led that has controlled all of these international banking transactions and transfers globally between banks, that has been inextricably linked to the reserve status, reserve currency status of the American dollar globally. Take that monopoly away, and all of a sudden, you have a problem for the American Zio Anglo Empire. And Paul Craig Roberts put it well a few years ago in discussing all of this. He said, empires eventually run out of men and money. The United States and the entire Zio Anglo American Empire are in danger of just that. So this is something I think, I'm not an economist, but it's very obvious they're monitoring the good writings of people who are, that this business of undermining SWIFT and creating an alternative to the SWIFT monopoly is just as critical to the end of the Zio Empire as the whole issue of ending Israel's nuclear monopoly is in the Middle East.
You know, there's a... Okay, so I did... I took your advice, and I looked up. There is something Russia's created called the System for Transfer of Financial Messages, which is similar to SWIFT in terms of technology and infrastructure, but it's not changing money yet. But there is something else. And this is something that regular people can use. It used to be called TransferWise. Maybe it's now just called Wise. But if you want to send money from one location to another, and they deal with smaller amounts of money, but it tends to be cheaper than going through your bank. They have a way of avoiding SWIFT. And what it is if you've got somebody in America who wants to send money to Britain and somebody in Britain who wants to send money to America, they just without actually sending money from one country to another, they just match up the two people, like the person in Britain who wants to send money with somebody in Britain who wants to receive money, and they do it like that. At any rate, though, I want to move on to the Donbass, and I understand that The Economist, do they have Vladimir Putin on their cover of their magazine this week?
Yes, they do, and you know, it's interesting. I periodically will walk into Barnes & Noble and see what these mainstream media publications are reporting on, just so that I have an idea as to what particular group of lies happen to be circulating in any particular week. And this week's Economist has Vladimir Putin on the cover, looking appropriately demonic in terms of the way the Economist wants him depicted. And the title of the cover story is Putin's Latest Move, or Move or Moves. And when you look at this and read through, it's basically a summation of the worst Zio neocon lies you have ever read about NATO, about the Ukraine, about Donbass, and about how Vladimir Putin's Russia is involved in unacceptable aggression in the Ukraine, and that Putin's brand of aggression, we are led to believe, it potentially threatens all of Europe. Now, this is blatant nonsense, obviously, but I think the important thing in emphasizing this Economist cover story from this week is to contrast what's in there with alternative sources that you're only going to find out about if you're listening to shows like this one on RBN or if you're listening to what I do with ACH once a month out of London on the first Monday of the month, and that is Donbass Insider, South Front. Take a look at what the English language Russian media is saying on these subjects. Take a look at all of these far less controlled media outlets and alternative foreign outlets who publish in English, and compare that with what's in that Economist article on Putin this week. It's absolutely breathtaking if you undertake that exercise to see exactly what it is that publications like The Economist are trying to convey to an international Western public that is perhaps largely unsuspecting as to what the agenda is. But take a look at that cover story, folks, if you want to see just how bad the reporting is on what is going on in the Ukraine and in Donbass right now.
So I think a lot of people have heard about the history of Crimea, which was, I guess it was taken over by the Russian Empire from the Ottomans in, what, the late 1700s? And then the British tried to take it over or something in the Crimea War. But anyway, that's kind of ancient history. But it was Russian. And it was, when the Soviet Union was formed, it was part of the Russian Soviet Federated Socialist Republic, the RFSSR, which was the main component of the USSR.
Yes.
But until the 1950s, and it was transferred to Ukraine by Khrushchev, who wasn't ethnic Ukrainian himself, but he had been, before becoming Soviet leader, he had been the leader of the Ukrainian Communist Party. And so there was some sort of internal politicking there. And there was politics in communist countries. I mean, there's politics everywhere. So he was trying to shore up his support, because you need support if you're going to rule a country. Apparently it was done, in, at least according to a lot of people, it was done in violation of the Soviet Constitution. And how much does the Soviet Constitution, what was constitutional or not under the Soviet Constitution, how much does it matter now? I don't know. But at any rate, the people...
I think what you're identifying is that area was identified with Russia even before the American Revolutionary War. That needs to be underscored. The other thing is, and one continues to read these lies in this Economist cover story on Putin this week, references made to the Russian invasion of Crimea. The Russians have not invaded Crimea. The Russians have a naval base at Sevastopol in Crimea.
Always have.
And that is by prior arrangement with the Crimean government, and that once the United States
and the Ukrainian government.
Yes. And that's right. And once the United States and the EU and the Israelis all participated in overthrowing the Yanukovych regime in Kiev in February of 2014, subsequently, of course, the people in eastern Ukraine knew what was going on, wanted no part of their being ruled by this illegitimate government that had been installed by Clinton and Newland and Obama. They wanted no part of that.
Kerry, because by the time it actually happened, Kerry had replaced Clinton.
Right. The other thing is that in terms of Crimea, there was, we'll call it a referendum, call it a plebiscite, folks, call it what you will, but a staggering percentage of the people of Crimea voted to reestablish their relationship with Russia as a clear and acceptable alternative to being ruled by this Western and Zionist banking consortium that had been installed in Kiev. None of this is made clear by The Economist, of course, which, among other things, repeats these lies about Russia having invaded Crimea. The whole thing is preposterous, and yet whether you're talking The Economist or The Wall Street Journal or The New York Times or Joe Biden or Victoria Nuland or any of these entities, they keep repeating this as a mantra of truth when in fact it is demonstrably false.
Okay, now, just with the Crimea, first of all, geographically, you know, it is technically a peninsula, but it is connected to Ukraine by the narrowest of isthmuses.
Yes.
And it is separated from Russia by the narrowest of straits.
What is it called? The Kerch Strait, I believe. K-E-R-C-H, I believe.
Yeah, which yes. Russia promptly has built a bridge over. That's how narrow. So now it's connected to the mainland of Russia.
Yes.
And, of course, you could easily dig a canal or channel through that narrow isthmus. It had been under the Soviet Union. Originally, it was the Crimean Autonomous Crimean Autonomous Socialist Soviet Republic, part of the Russian SFSSR. It was downgraded at the end of World War II. It was downgraded from an autonomous republic to an oblast, which means something in Russian. Then it was transferred to Ukraine. Then it was upgraded again to an autonomous republic. And then after the dissolution of the Soviet Union, it voted for independence from Ukraine, but then promptly froze its declaration of independence. And that was the situation. And so they just unfroze that declaration of independence after the illegal coup. And so that's Ukraine. And it, as I've mentioned before, it had been because Ukraine has a small Crimea has a small population, relatively small in territory, but very strategic. It was my understanding that Vladimir Putin allowed for the entry of Crimea into the Russian Federation because of its small population, which wouldn't fundamentally disrupt the balance between pro-Russian and pro-European groups in Ukraine.
Right.
But the larger Donbass region, if that were to leave Ukraine, then Ukraine would have a pretty permanent anti-Russian, or seemingly permanent anti-Russian majority. And I thought that's what Putin was trying to avoid. And I don't know if there's any point in avoiding it now.
I don't think there is. And, of course, I don't speak for Vladimir Putin, obviously. And I am not a specialist in the region. But it seems to me if we look at JCPOA P5+1 as a model for this, or if we look at all the promises made to Gorbachev by George Herbert Walker Bush in the wake of the fall of the Berlin Wall, that the United States would never recruit Warsaw Pact countries to join NATO. The United States would not begin deploying NATO military assets ever closer to Russian borders. There would be no provocative military exercises being conducted in the Baltics and so forth and so on. All of that has been proven to be a pack of lies, and we all know this. And I think in this particular situation, if we look at the real situation with America and NATO on the one hand, and with the Russians on the other since the end of the old Soviet Union, or we look at JCPOA P5+1 with Iran, or we're looking at the situation in the Ukraine since February of 2014, I think Mr. Putin, much like his Iranian counterparts, should have no reason to trust anything that the American government, the American president, or the American State Department have to say on any of these subjects. And therefore, I think in terms of what has happened in these last 7 years in Ukraine, that I see no impediment, frankly, at this juncture, given the fact that I can't basically even describe the Zio-American position as one of diplomacy, I see no reason why the Russians should feel any hesitation at this point in failing to recognize these independent republics that have declared themselves as being viable in the Donbass. And I guess, sir, you're talking about Lugansk and Donetsk.
Right. And Lugansk and Donetsk, they both declared themselves independent republics in 2014, about the same time as Crimea. They applied for membership in the Russian Federation and have been rejected, but they have been operating independently of Ukraine for the past 7 years. Okay, well, we're coming up on the break. We'll be right back.
Well, in 1814, we took a little trip along with Colonel Jackson down the mighty Mississippi. We took a little bacon and we took a little beans, and we met up with the British near the town of New Orleans. We fired our guns and the British kept...
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Kosher-tify, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Kosher-tified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Hey, honey, I'm home.
I grabbed the newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
The newspaper? Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, a majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper does not give out the important attention on what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Couldn't catch 'em down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
We are back, and so we just have a few more minutes, and I understand you're going to be putting up some interesting articles by Lou Rockwell on the big board.
Yes, one of these is by Pat Buchanan that is presently on LouRockwell.com, and it deals with the Biden administration in terms of economics and statistics. Has anyone really counted the numbers on where Biden is taking us with all of these stimulus checks, where he is taking us in regard to all of these expenditures for all the different things that Pat Buchanan discusses there? Folks, this dovetails with the whole issue of the wider vulnerability of the American dollar as the reserve currency of the world. And I think you'll see that when you look at what Pat says today at Lou Rockwell on that subject. Also, my good friend Vasco Kallmeyer, who is a refugee from communist imprisonment. I believe he's originally from Czechoslovakia. He's been writing some good articles that have been appearing both at Lou Rockwell and at LifeSite News. His latest for LifeSite News has just been published by Lou Rockwell today, and this deals with the wider issue of what Kallmeyer sees as the connection between what he thought he was fleeing and getting out of a communist-dominated situation and what he sees transpiring in terms of legitimate dissonance in this country, where the older Marxist model that he fought for much of his life, in his view, seems to be reappearing in what we used to know as the United States of America. And I think all of our RBN listeners will profit by taking a look at that Vasco Kallmeyer article at Lou Rockwell, which in turn Lou borrowed from LifeSite News.
So, you know, a lot of people who say that the United States is becoming communist, and if this person that you're referring to actually grew up in Eastern Europe or somewhere, well, his opinion carries some weight. But to me, it seems very, very different. It seems that different. And here's one thing. I mean, what they seem to be doing in the United States is, to a large extent, is getting people to work less and less. And,
yes.
You know, no matter what you say about Eastern Europe, it might have been very inefficient, but people were working.
Yes.
And here, they seem to be getting people off of work.
Yes. And I think in Vasco's case, Vasco Kallmeyer's case, I think he's especially concerned for what is happening to freedom of speech in this country. And, of course, that's where our listeners at RBN, I'm sure on all of the different shows, will identify with the dangerous direction that he discusses there that is rearing its head in this country, as we see that whether you're talking about what's on our newsstands with publications like The Economist, or you're speaking about these circumstances with demonetizing good alternative news sites, or basically engaging with the Anti-Defamation League and these fusion centers in demonizing legitimate American dissidents. I think this is the sort of thing that Kallmeyer is very, very concerned about, as he discusses some of it in that article.
Okay. Hey, Mark, thank you so much for joining us, and your German Shepherd as well.
Yes. And I will this weekend get a bunch of things up on the big board for our people, both for this show as well as for ACH's Dankoff report, which comes up Monday morning.
Monday morning. Okay, we'll look forward to that. And I'll be back again next week. And I'll be on, I think Andy has me on the first Wednesday. And it is, the title of the show is like Boomer Riffleopolis or something like that. It's from Mary Poppins. I don't know.
Hey, I'll tune in. I will look forward to that.
Okay. And I'll be back again next week with more exciting episodes of National Bugle Radio.
For 20 years now, Extendivite has proven time and again it really works. Here is a testimonial from Amazon.com. I received an arterial switch at birth. In my mid-20s, I started getting slight runs of NSVT. Nothing too serious, but enough to cause worry. I started taking Extendivite a little over 2 years ago, and it helped cut the palpitations and NSVT down drastically. This isn't a cure-all supplement. I strongly recommend a good diet and exercise to aid in any heart troubles you may be having, and I strongly recommend giving Extendivite a try. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a two-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network.
because you can handle the truth.